Welcome, everybody, to the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho, and welcome to the show where we spotlight legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or visit www.publicityworksagency.com. Sometimes that is a tongue twister. We shine only when we make you shine. Our special guest today is John Payne, who became the frontman and bassist for the supergroup Asia in 1992 at the invitation of keyboardist Jeff Downs, replacing vocalist bassist John Wetton. Asia extensively toured the world for the next 14 years, performing new classics and old favorites. With John Payne fronting the band, Asia released 8 stunning studio albums and several live recordings. In 2006, Jeff Downs left the band to reform the 1982 lineup for their 25th anniversary. On May 9, 2006, John Payne, Jeff Downs, John Wetton, Carl Palmer, and Steve Howe contractually agreed that John Payne would continue his 14-year legacy with Asia as Asia featuring John Payne. Asia featuring John Payne has been touring in North America since 2008. John Payne also formed the progressive rock group GPS in 2006. On April 15, 2014, Asia, featuring John Payne, released the critically acclaimed album, Recollections, a tremendous tribute to British prog. John Payne's latest release is Intelligent Music Project 3, Touching the Divine, featuring session aces Simon Phillips on drums and percussion, Nathan East on bass, Tim Pierce on guitars, and the remarkable voices of John Payne, ex-Asia, and Toto's Joseph Williams, bringing their own flavor to all 14 equally outstanding pieces in the album. The release is available to purchase at Amazon.com or iTunes. It's my great pleasure to welcome John Payne to the Ray Shasho Show. Hello, John.
Hi, Ray. How are you doing, dear fella?
I am doing fine. Thank you very much. I'm here in beautiful Florida, and are you in Nevada?
Yeah, I'm in Vegas. I used to live in L.A., but now I've moved to Vegas, but I seem to be spending more and more time in Florida.
Well, that brings up a point. You have a concert coming up. I'm in Sarasota, not too far away from Fort Myers, and there's a show coming up there at Germain Arena called the Rock Pack.
Yes.
And listen to this, everybody. This lineup is John Payne, Robin Zander of Cheap Trick, Steve Walsh from Kansas, Bobby Kimball, the original lead singer of Toto, Fee Waybill of the Tubes, and Mickey Thomas of the Starship. What a lineup, man.
it took some putting together.
Is any chance of you guys making this a tour, or is this just like a one-time thing?
I'm going to tour it. It's going to be, you know, cherry-picked gigs, and the lineup will change with certain people still staying in. It all depends on people's availability, but it will always be 6 or 5 vocalists plus myself from a major classic rock bands and the original singers. So that's what I plan to do for the rest of this year and early all through 2016.
Well, that's phenomenal because there's so many, the baby boomers now want to see all their music being played live and the original guys, you know?
Yeah, the cool thing is that you're not going to go and see a concert of their latest album,
right,
which is, we always love doing our latest works.
Sure.
But, you know, the majority of people are there to see Bobby, to hear him sing Africa and Hold the Line or, you know, Robin to sing I Want You to Want Me or The Flame or, you know, any of those great songs.
Or Fee Waybill singing White Punks on Dope.
Yeah, we're actually going to be doing White Punks on Dope. And, of course, She's a Beauty. And Fee's such a cool guy. What it is I've been in the industry for so long now, even though I'm only 26 years old last week, that I've managed to work or do festivals or in the studio with all of these guys. So it's like a friends reunion. And the cool thing about this show is that it's a concert, but it's got a concert with a concept. That I have an English pub stage left, and at the beginning of the show, all the guys from the singers from these bands come into my pub, and I talk to them about their past, their future, their views, and then we go and play their songs. So it's kind of like Letterman meets a rock concert.
Well, that's awesome because, you know, these are the most popular shows. I cover Ringo and his all-star band. I cover Happy Together Tour, and I also cover Hippie Fest. And, you know, those are always sold out. All those shows are always sold out. And Hippie Fest is kind of losing a little of its oomph because Johnny Winter passed away, and he used to be a regular of that tour. So we need some fresh blood in there. So I'm glad you're doing this.
Yeah, it's kind of this hasn't really been done this way before. You know, as you say, we've had Voices of Classic Rock, and we've had the Ringo's All Stars, but this has got a twist to it as well, and I think it's going to be a real fun time for everybody there. And then can you imagine 2 hours of back to back hits? And basically, that's what's going to happen on November the 19th. At the Jermaine Arena there in Fort Myers.
Well, there's nothing better. There really isn't any better. I can also help you with some of the talent because I'm always getting guys looking for gigs like Chris Thompson, you know, from Man for Man.
I know Chris very well. I did, firstly, the drummer in Asia, Chris Slade, went on to join AC/DC just recently.
Right.
He was my drummer for 7 years. He was in Man for Man. And also with Chris, I did a great thing in the UK called Jeff Wayne's War of the Worlds.
Right, I remember that.
I played the parson, which was Phil Lynott's part. So Chris and I know each other very well. How do you know Chris?
Well, I've interviewed him several times, and I've tried to hook him up with Hippie Fest, and they were more than delighted to say, "Yeah, Will, we'd definitely like him on the tour." But he's looking for these kind of gigs, so he'd definitely get on the gig on the tour with you.
Well, Chris would be a great one.
Oh yeah. So, yeah, definitely get in contact with Chris because he'd do it for sure.
yeah. No, well, I love it. His voice is just stunning.
Oh, it's incredible. You know, and I promoted his last couple of albums, and he's a hell of a nice guy.
Oh, yeah.
Let's first chat about Intelligent Music Project 3, Touching the Divine. It features, you know, I mean, a great list of players on the album. How did you guys assemble getting together for this thing?
Basically, this came through my very good friend Simon Phillips,
right,
who was drummer with many bands, but he played with Asia in 92 when I joined.
Right.
Toto, of course, and The Who. And Simon and I have been friends for a long while, and Simon had worked on some of these projects before. It's a project out of Sofia in Romania. Not Romania, Sofia, Bulgaria, sorry.
Right.
And he said, this guy has a bucket list, and every year he chooses the people to record an album. And this guy is a pretty much a one-off dude. He's a European Citizen of the Year. He runs pharmaceuticals. He runs charities. And he has his own recording studio out there, and he writes these excellent progressive songs. So Simon called me up and said, how do you feel like working with Joseph William, Nathan East, Tim Pierce, and myself? So I told him to go for a hike. and then decided, oh, no, I'm going to do it. Yeah, I mean, I'd worked with Simon before. I'd worked with Tim Pierce, who's probably the top session guitarist in America. I've met Joseph Williams from Toto several times before, and I'd never met Nathan, and I thought, well, this is going to be a great experience. And within a week, this is about a year ago, I was in Sofia, Bulgaria, in the studio singing these cool songs.
Now, who wrote most of the music on this?
The Bulgarian entrepreneur Milan Vrbeski.
Really, he wrote all the songs, huh?
He wrote all the songs, all the lyrics, and you know he's one hell of a creative person.
Yeah, very, very intelligent. That's incredible. Now I've noticed, I've been following this album. It's doing pretty well on YouTube. Mind Projection is getting a lot of hits and a lot of people are playing it.
It is.
We're going to try to play Mind Projection in about 15 minutes or so. Engineers are scrambling as we speak, but that's the official video is on YouTube and doing rather well. Also, Escape is also on a great track.
Yeah.
They're all good tunes. Stay Up is very prog track. And I love We Can, which is a beautiful track.
Yeah.
Great songs. You shine on this album.
Thank you so much. I mean, a lot of the songs have great changes in there.
Yeah.
And also, because they're written by somebody else, it's not the usual places where I'd go to. So a lot of it... shows the more lyrical lower side of my voice, and then it's got the occasional, you know, high operatic stuff that I kind of do mixed in
right.
with it. But some of it is very very melodic and you know, not where normally I'd go, and some very interesting piano arrangements and musical arrangements on this album. And of course the playing is just out of this world. I wrote to Nathan East about a week ago, mm-hmm. and you know, I'd never met him before. Quincy Jones says he's the most recorded session player of all time.
Really? Is that right? Huh.
Oh, he's been on everything from, you know, Lionel Richie to Eric Clapton. And, because I'm a singer bass player, so I wrote, I said, "Dear Nathan, as a bass player, I hate you." And he just sent me a smiley face back. But, you know, what a player. I mean, out of this world. I mean, I feel very honored to be on the same recording as these guys.
Every track is good on this album. Everybody needs to buy it. Simply Feels Good is a great rocker. Love that tune as well. They're all good. Every song on this album is great. I think for some reason Mind Projection just keeps popping up, you know, because it's...
Yeah, it's very accessible. It's
right.
very accessible as a track. And the playing and the soloing and everything is par excellence, as they say in France.
Exactly. Well, someone speaking of YouTube, someone uploaded a YouTube video of rare hits and highlights of the John Payne era. I don't know if you saw that or not, but it's got all your music from 1988 through 2013. I mean, whoever did this did an excellent, excellent job.
They're very sad people. That's all I can say. Like, they obviously haven't got much time on their hands. It's like someone came up to me once and said, "Are you John Payne, or are you a John Payne impersonator?" And I said, "Well, if I'm a John Payne impersonator, I must be a very sad person." Actually, the funniest thing I ever, I landed at Heathrow Airport one time
right.
when I lived in Los Angeles. I was coming through, and there was three old ladies standing around just outside the customs area, and one of them came up to me and said, "Do you mind if we get your autograph?" And I said, "Well, that's cool. You know, we're not bothering you, are we?" And I said, "No." But I said, "When did you recognize me?" "Oh, we know who you are." And I said, "Well, who am I then?"
He's like, oh,
you know, these were ladies like in their 80s.
Yeah.
"Yeah, we know who you are. You're Led Zeppelin." So, I'm just waiting for, I'm going to talk to ASCAP next week and see where my back royalties are. So, all those wonderful songs like Stairway to Heaven and Rock and Roll and Black Dog and all that
That's
stuff.
Right.
I wrote, you know. So
yeah, where's my cut?
Yeah, it's nice to be recognized for your art.
Yeah, exactly.
Even if it's by ladies with a blue ring.
Hey, at least they know you're famous.
Yeah, the groupies have got a little older, though.
Yeah, exactly. You do a great little old lady impression. You must have watched a lot of Monty Python in your day.
Yeah, it's so funny. I was actually watching trying to show some friends of mine yesterday, Life of Brian. But
yep.
we could come up with, it's actually not on Netflix or Amazon. The only one that's on there is The Meaning of Life. And it's so funny. Actually, they do have a trailer for Life of Brian in the very, very beginning where, you know, the three wise men visit him in the stable. And his mother goes, what do you want? You're following a star? What's wrong with you? Yeah. And she tries to get rid of them. And she goes, we bring presents. And she goes, oh, why didn't you say earlier? Now, I love Monty Python. I actually, in California, used to go to the parties at the British Embassy. And one night, over a bottle of single malt, myself and the British consulate and Eric Idle sat together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, growing up as a schoolboy, those songs, those albums coming out, I knew everything. I knew more than Eric Idle. And, you know, he was like going, John, what was the bird that at the school? I said, it was the school cormorant, Eric. They used to rub linseed oil into him.
You know, me and you are about the same age, and when I was in high school, Monty Python was everything, you know.
I did speak to him that Life of Brian, when they came over here, I can't remember what years it was, you know, the first movie, The Holy Grail did very well in America.
Yep.
And then the second movie, which I think was The Life of Brian, then it was The Meaning of Life.
Right.
But Eric Idle said to me that when they played it to the execs at wherever it was, whether it was Fox, I can't remember, one of the big three or four film companies, he said there was complete silence afterwards. No one clapped.
Really?
Because, you know, it's basically taking the Mickey out of Jesus.
Yeah.
And I said, well, it wasn't really. I went to a Catholic school, and I remember one of the Catholic priests actually going to see the movie and telling me in class how much he enjoyed it.
That's right. You know, Catholic priests have a good sense of humor. I've known a lot of them that are, you know, they're crazy.
Well, they should have to put up with people like me.
All right. You were in the band Moonstone, right? And you were in that band for a long time.
That was one of my very first bands, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I started playing at the age of 7 or 8 and always wanted my own bands. And I remember actually talking about Monty Python voice, writing this song about the seagull. Because I just read Jonathan Livingston Seagull, the book.
Right, yep.
And my mom thought I'd written a love letter to some girl. She goes, what was that letter in your room? What's her name? I said, Mom, it's a seagull. Well, that's a bit strange, isn't it? So, I was always into, like, originating songs. And Moonstone was my first proper band.
Yep, Moonstone kind of got you into, because you backed up some really cool bands, like the New York Dolls, right?
New York Dolls, Rod Argent. Yeah. And how I did it was with sheer tenacity that in St. Albans City Hall, where I lived in Archer, the local promoter used to go fly posting, bill posting, which you'd do in the middle of the night, totally illegal, bucket of paste and a poster, and you put them up on, you know, bus stops and shop windows and all that stuff, and you put them up there. And
right.
It had to be done in the middle of the night. And I was the only person that would go around with him and do it. And that for doing that, he used to let my band be the support for all these major bands going through this city hall.
Wow. Yeah, and then you got into, you were on Roger Daltrey's album.
Yes.
Which kind of began your career.
That was
as well.
A cool break because there was a local producer in my little town, in my little village, called Alan
right.
Shackup, who
right.
used to be in a band called Babe Ruth. And
I remember Babe Ruth. Yeah.
They were great.
They were a good band.
Great band. And
yeah.
he said to me one day, he said, would you like to come to London and do some backing vocals on an album? I said, I'd love to. And I'm this green kid. And I said, who is he? He goes, Roger Daltrey. I mean, can you imagine being told that? And to this day, that album still, Under a Raging Moon, is a very powerful album, production-wise, song-wise, everything.
And that kind of took you off after that. I guess Jeff was the one who found you. And got you involved in Asia, right, Jeff Downs?
Yeah, basically, I've been working with another band in London, mm-hmm. which was Phil Spalding was the bass player. In,
right.
We did some demos together, and he was the bass player in a band called GTR. So
right.
I go to the studio that was owned by Virgin at the time, the Townhouse, and interestingly, it's where I met Freddie Mercury. Queen were recording next door.
Really?
In fact, this is why this bit of a notable fact that, you know, Steve Howe played on a Queen album. He played the classical guitar on Innuendo because he was recording with GTR in
right.
the town studio with Phil Spalding. Remember they had a big hit with When the Heart Rules the Mind
right.
And The Hunter. And because it was Steve Howe and Steve Hackett. And Brian May went next door to their studio and said, Steve, have you got a nylon guitar I can use to record the intro for a Queen song? And Steve said, sure. And then he came back an hour later and goes, I can't bloody do it. Will you do it for me? So the beginning of Innuendo is actually Steve Howe. But that was the studio where I met Jeff Downs because Jeff Downs was... He was the producer for GTR.
Right.
So we started hanging out, becoming friends, and then I recorded some demos with him, and then one day he said to me, would you like to join the band? And there we go.
Who was in the band at the time you joined?
It was basically based around myself and Jeff Downs.
Okay.
So we recorded the album. We started bringing in people. Al Petrelli, who's now in Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
Right.
Steve Howe. Steve Howe played on half the tracks. Cole Palmer played on some of the tracks.
Right.
Simon Phillips,
yep.
who's on Touching the Divine, he played on some of the tracks. We had a couple more drummers, Nigel Glockler from Saxon.
Mm-hmm.
It was really cool. And then we went out on tour, and Steve Howe came out with us.
It was a great transition, you know, from one band to another. And
it's always very hard.
Yeah.
I spoke to Brian Johnson about this from AC/DC.
Right.
You know,
yeah, he lives around here.
He does, yes. So
yeah.
does Cliff, I believe. Cliff lives there as well.
Yep.
Cliff Williams, I know well, is a real nice guy. In fact, I'm going to try and get them to come along to the gig on the 19th of November at Jermaine in there.
Yep.
So, it was hard. It was hard jumping into those huge shoes, but, I managed to spend years in the band and tour everywhere and mix, produce, and write, co-write all the albums, and it was a great time.
Well, it's all because you're very talented and you got a great voice. Nobody else could have done it, only you.
Very kind of you. I'll send the check later.
Okay. We're going to try right now, let's see if the engineers are ready, to play Mind Projection from Music Project 3, Touching the Divine, and we're going to see if we can get that on out.
Cool.
What a great song, huh? That's
Thank
John
you,
Payne's
man.
Latest release. It's Intelligent Music Project 3, Touching the Divine. What an awesome tune. It's getting lots of hits on YouTube. Man, that could be a soundtrack to a movie.
It's so funny, you know, a lot of stuff that I've done has been very basically visual as well. You know, it's,
right.
Especially when I write my own songs, I try and want people to draw a little mental picture in their mind, and you know, although I didn't write this one, I agree with you. It would be cool in a movie.
You need to work together with Kevin Godley, you know, from 10cc. Who's,
you know, I absolutely love his stuff.
Yep.
And you know, he had a band called Wax.
Right.
On stage, and one of my favorite ever songwriters is Andrew Gold.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Whose father was a songwriter, too.
Right.
He wrote the theme tune to Exodus, which is a great, great tune. But I worked with Andrew Gold, and we became really good friends. Sadly, 6 or 7 years ago, he died of cancer.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Lonely Boy is one of the most cleverly structured songs.
Mm-hmm.
And him and Kevin Godley, incredible.
Well, I talked to Kevin. He was my guest back on the 28th of September. So, he's another guy you should get together with. I'll fix you up.
Yeah. No, he's a genius. He really is.
He's a good guy. You know, I know you don't really like to perform covers and things like that. But I've got it. You like to write your own songs, but I got to tell you, man, Recollections is one incredible album. I'm a big prog fan, and there's a lot of groups that you feature that no one really talks about. You know, like Barclay James Harvest, Camel, which are two of my favorite bands of all time. You know.
You know what people don't realize is I was doing a show that I co-wrote and co-created here called Raining the Rockfall in Vegas.
Right.
And I didn't want to do a proper album to tour it, as I couldn't tour it. So I thought, if I don't do covers, why don't I do a cover of what I consider was some of the influential bands of prog? And what people don't realize is that it started out of a lot of folk music.
That's right.
And a lot of those bands all came out of England, you know,
mm-hmm.
like
sure.
The Straws. And, you know, even you could actually consider Sgt. Pepper's as maybe being the first prog album.
Right.
You know, that it's not what it's morphed into a mathematical exercise with some bands. You know, that there was a very much strong song sensibility. And it was really nice doing, you know, a Camel song or Barclay James Harvest, who I got to tour with, which was cool. But and I managed to do my own twists on a lot of those songs, and it was kind of cool doing the Alan Parsons Project song as well. And you know, I sent the song to Alan, and before I mixed it, he was going, "Oh, there's one harmony that I never did. Can you put this in the original?" And Alan, you know, got quite involved in that, and he also came and. When I shot the video for that song, he came and was in the video.
Yeah, I saw the interview you guys did together, which is really cool. You and Alan together. Yeah.
Yeah, real nice guy.
You did two Alan Parsons tracks on that album. You did an incredible job on Court of the Crimson King, which you actually play in concert, don't you?
Yeah, we've played it, and you know, I put it in a higher key to suit my voice a bit more.
Right.
It was maybe more groove-oriented. And the nice thing for me is I got to play keyboards on the whole album, which was quite a challenge.
Yeah, I've talked to Greg Lake. He's a funny guy.
Lakey, oh yeah, yeah.
He's hilarious. He's a really nice guy.
He's a very, very bright guy, and obviously I'm very close to that band with, the relationship with that band with Asia.
Yeah. Yep.
Keith Emerson's a good friend of mine, and a very cool guy.
I've interviewed Keith as well. Another nice guy, really good guy. We had a long conversation about his flying piano at the California Jam.
That's correct. Yeah.
Here's a couple of names you might consider for the next prog album. Remember XTC?
I do. Yes.
But XTC formed into a band called the Dukes of Stratosphere, which hardly anybody ever's heard of. But they were a really good band. Excellent. The Dukes of Stratosphere came from XTC, and what happened there, I talked to Todd Rundgren, because I think he produced XTC and the Dukes of Stratosphere, and he says that they did that kind of like undercover, as a new band, because I guess the main guy in the band of XTC was afraid to fly, so they couldn't do a lot of touring or anything. So they just
Can you remember that guy's name?
The guy from XTC?
Yeah.
I think it was the lead singer who was afraid of flying. What's his
name? He's the lead singer guitarist.
Colin something, right? Colin?
Yes, you're correct.
Colin Molden or something like that.
Yeah, I remember I met him in a studio once.
Right. Good band, and if you ever see a Dukes of Stratosphere album, it's very kind of Beatles-ish in a way. Kind of got quirky Beatles sound. So I know you've been asked this question a bunch of times. Who are the musicians that inspired you into becoming a performer? It had to be somebody in your early youth, right?
Yeah, the singing, and funny enough, he appeared in a dream last night. Great singer. There's a guy called Graham Bonnet. Mm-hmm. He ended up singing in Rainbow.
Okay.
And before then, he was in a band called the Marbles.
Yeah, I remember the Marbles, yeah.
And Marbles, yes, right, and they had this song called Only One Woman.
Right.
Which was written by one of the Bee Gees, funny enough. And a great, great song. Then I listened to a lot of Nat King Cole through my father.
Right.
Then I got into a lot of soul, like with Marvin Gaye. And then I was also parallel into, big Deep Purple fan, big Rainbow fan. So Ronnie James Dio and I, who later became friends, and sadly he died. I got to sing at his funeral, but he was a big influence to me. So there were particularly the guitar led bands that I really was into. Trowell was a big one for me because James Dewar, the bass player, had a beautiful, rich. Tenor voice, and of course Robin Trower is just an incredible guitarist.
Yeah, Jimmy Dore was definitely one of my favorite vocalists of all time. Probably underrated too,
Yeah.
I've talked to Robin several times, and Bill Lorden, the drummer, he's a Facebook friend, so he's always posting things on the Trower.
What a great drummer. Yeah, I've met Robin once and just...
Right.
His playing is still as good as it was.
Nice, very nice, very nice. Great guitar
live album came out.
Great guitar player. Yeah, I could see you filling shoes from so many bands with your voice. Even Kansas. You would have been a great vocalist for Kansas.
and they became friends of mine, and now I've got the great pleasure with Steve Walsh working with me in the Rock Pack in November.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, you're on to something huge with if you can tour this musicians and then change musicians, from time to time, like Ringo's band and
I've worked with Lou Gramm, there's Jolene Turner, I'd like to approach people like Peter Cetera, Michael McDonald, Kevin Cronin. It would be very cool.
Well, I'll suggest some names because they're always looking for gigs. They're always asking me.
Dude.
You know what's cool is that you were an ELO when you moved over to Asia, right?
Correct, yeah.
How cool is that?
Well, it was very cool, you know, and I had one of the most ferocious managers of all time managing me, Don Arden.
Right.
You know, although he's passed away, he was Ozzy's father-in-law.
Huh. I didn't know that.
Sharon Osbourne, that's her father. Sharon Osbourne was tour manager for ELO for a while.
I didn't know that. I had no idea. Huh.
Yeah.
So you picked Asia over ELO.
Very, very hard. I mean, I was a huge ELO fan.
Yeah.
But I think it was harder to be accepted as a vocalist for ELO, whereas with Asia, you know, there was the playing side of it as well.
Right.
And, you know, at the end we had the name ELO, and then I remember there was fighting over it, and then it became ELO Part 1.
Right.
And,
yeah. Came with that.
And it was kind of a bit of a mess at the time, although they did sort it out.
Yeah.
And I think at the time I made the right choice.
I think so, because all the other ex-Asia band members gave you the green light, which is cool. And, you know, that makes sense, because you're still young. Let's, you know, even though I've seen you in videos saying that you're an old guy, and you're not, because you're my age. So stop saying that. You're not. You're going to be carrying on the tradition of Asia from now on.
You know, I'm very lucky my voice hasn't changed.
Exactly, yeah.
No, I'm still at the same range I had when I was 20 years old.
Well, you must take care of it. I guess you're not a smoker, I'm guessing.
I don't smoke. No, I don't smoke.
Right.
I drink, but I don't drink when I'm on tour. Alcohol affects my voice terribly.
Well, drinking's okay once in a while.
Yeah. But, no, I love drinking, but for me it doesn't work with singing. So
yeah.
I treat my voice very much like, you know, an athlete would treat running or whatever.
Right.
I've got to make sure I'm hydrated and that I've got 8 hours sleep and that I'm really rehearsed.
I talked to Billy Sherwood recently also. He was on the show, and he's continuing the Yes tradition.
Cause, he is.
You know, Billy
does
Billy Young, too. Yeah. So
Billy does a great job. He's an incredible bass player. He's a great producer.
Yep.
You know, he's a good guitarist. He's an all-around, you know, really, really together guy, you know, and it's very hard for anybody to fill or even sit in the shoes of Chris Squire.
I know. It's almost like Yes is over, in my opinion, unless they start bringing back John Anderson. And, you know, I talked to Patrick Mraz. He's interested in coming back. And, you know, maybe Rick Wakeman. Do it. I told Billy, why don't you do a reunion tour, you know? I don't know if he wants to do that or not. I think he wants to get into the new stuff, you know, into a new
era. I think Patrick Mraz lives down near you somewhere there in Florida, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. Yeah.
Because he came to one of the Asia shows and lent us a keyboard. And then we went to a bar afterwards, and he played piano and just blew everybody away.
Oh,
that
cool.
Guy really is, you know, an Einstein of the keyboards.
Yeah.
He's crazy in a good way.
Yeah.
But his playing is phenomenal.
I love his accent.
Yeah. But he's Swiss, isn't he, I think?
Yeah, He speaks fluent French.
Yeah, I imagine if he's Swiss, he probably speaks German and Italian too.
Oh yeah, he does. Yeah,
because they border all those countries.
Yeah, he was talking to me. You know, he knew Salvador Dali back when he was living in Spain, and he used to talk to Salvador Dali in several different languages, I think.
Wow,
pretty cool. So, how about? GPS, is that still a band going on? What are you guys doing with that?
It's still there. I mean, kind of the new Asia lineup is at the moment.
Right.
It's almost GPS. And, you know, when I was in Asia, I was given this tape, of a load of guitarists. And this guy came up who'd hardly done any albums. He was just teaching at a school. And I heard about four bars. And I went, this guy's a genius. And... You know, Guthrie's gone on to bigger and better things. You know, he came to me, John. He goes, John, I'm sorry to say this, but, you know, I want to leave Asia and do my own stuff.
Right.
It's not really a challenge for me. And, you know, you'd think a band like Asia would be a challenge for a guitarist, but he's right. You know, Guthrie is superhuman guitarist. He's not driven by finances. He plays all day. And, you know, he's probably one of the most technically accomplished guitarists on this planet. So I'd only wait for him to, you know, I've talked to him about it, and he's considered it to do a GPS album. You know, if he says he has a window to do it, then I'll record a GPS album with him, because he's just phenomenal.
Yeah, that'll be great. That'd be awesome. How about what's next for John Payne's Asia?
Well, I have an album recorded. I had to do a little bit more work with it. And at the moment, you know, I'm so embroiled in several shows that I'm writing and performing in that I kind of put it on a back boiler. I want to see if you know, the hard thing is with the original lineup being out there that I've held back the album while they release.
Right.
One, they asked me to, and I thought about it, and it wasn't my major consideration, but one was like, was confusion in the marketplace.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a really great album. I'm really happy with it.
Yeah.
It took years of songwriting and everything, but I think to have it, you know, go out, I'd have to see Jeff or Steve Howe say, you know, we're just going to be doing Yes.
Right.
If that was the case, then I'd release it. I'm not in a hurry to release that.
And I guess, what about touring? I know you've played a few dates here and there recently.
You know, with the Rock Pack, because of guys' schedules,
right,
it's going to be, you know, mostly spring and fall dates.
Okay.
And in the summer, I expect to be doing next summer some more Asia FJC dates on the road as well.
Yeah. Asia is a great festival group as well. There's a lot of festivals.
I think, yeah, that's how I want it. I don't really see it. You know, nobody, our fan base, wants to see this band in a club somewhere. It's not that kind of band.
Mm-hmm.
So festivals really make the most sense.
Yeah, they do. A lot of people are just doing festivals nowadays anyway. I guess they're a lot of fun.
Yeah.
When you were doing Vegas, that was really popular. And then wasn't there kind of a lawsuit going on for a while? Is that still happening or with the Rock Vault?
There was a lawsuit going on,
yeah.
I can't talk too much about it, but it got settled.
Oh, got settled. Very good. Excellent.
Got settled out of court. I mean, sadly, you know, I wasn't back in my own show, but you know, things changed.
Yep.
And because of that, I've gone to, you know, what I believe are bigger and better things. So, you know, I did 2 years in it, you know.
Yep.
I put most of the cast and band together. And when I started, I was co-writer, director, and producer, and performer.
Right.
And it was 5 nights a week, 2 hours a night. It was a great time, but, you know, everything has its time span.
Right. Well, you'll come up with all kinds of stuff, because the Rock Pack is huge. That's going to be tremendous.
Yeah, the cool thing about that is it's very different from Rock Vault.
Yeah.
Rock Vault was a chronological story of rock with a time machine. It was a musical. It was, you know, not the original guys singing the songs, but basically a really high-end covers band narrating the story chronologically with dancers and actors. You know, the Rock Pack is a concert, but actually you know, talks to the guys about their past, present, and future. So it's a very, very different thing. It's a concert. But it is individual.
But it definitely will be successful for years to come. I can tell you that because I followed so many of these kind of same concept shows for the last 5 or 6 years, and they always draw huge crowds. You know, and they're a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Tickets are selling very well at the Jermaine as well.
Oh yeah, that's got to be sold out here soon for sure. I'll promote it a little bit more anytime I can as well. Hey, John, this is a question I ask everyone that I interview, and I get some very interesting responses. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie Field of Dreams, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
For me, it's because of my soul background, and because the guy is just incredible in every area. I'd love today, one day, to work with Stevie Wonder.
Stevie Wonder, yep.
Yeah. He's just a legend.
You know, a lot of people wouldn't think that, you know? That's why this is a great question.
Yeah, a lot of people would think, you know, oh, you know, maybe you'd like to work with Deep Purple or...
Right.
You know, Rainbow are doing an album now and getting back together, and they've got a new vocalist, apparently. And, you know, that would be a cool gig to get. But, you know, if I'm being really honest, is, you know, the bucket list person would be Stevie Wonder.
Stevie Wonder, yeah. I've heard that before, actually.
Right.
Yeah, Robin Trower said James Brown.
Wow.
Yeah, so he's the same as you. He's you know, big R&B guy.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. And, you know, most of his music has got that R&B beat to it anyway, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So have you finally concluded that you are related to Thomas Paine?
You know, I have not. And in fact, several people have actually, you know, said, is that possible? And, you know, and here's the trouble with... a lot of these records, and you know, they're pretty good back in England, they go back a long while, but you know, all that has to happen is you make one mistake on one root of the genetic bar,
right,
and then you're off by a million miles. But also, you know, and if you go back further in time and further in time, you know, when there was no contraception,
right,
you know, you didn't know who your dad was.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But, you know, he is an incredible guy, incredible thinker, you know, and very talented. You know, he basically advised America on how it should be formed, I think.
Exactly.
You know, I have a very good friend who's an expert on Thomas Paine. And it would be interesting to know if I was related.
I like to see Thomas Paine today, what he thinks about politics today and the world and all that, you know. That'd be kind of neat to find out.
Well, some of the stuff was very prophetic as well, you know.
Yeah. Can you do a DNA thing? Would that help?
Well, I could, but it's finding his DNA, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's right.
But... You know, you could find someone that was a relative, that was a certain relative, and see if your DNA was related to that. But that would be very interesting to find out.
And then you said your name might have gotten changed along the way too, right? It might have been Paine.
It might have done, yeah.
Right. Huh. I found out somebody with my last name is actually fighting ISIS right now, and they were trying to take some kind of monument away, and he protected the monument, and he fought back and defeated ISIS. He's I can't remember what country, but my father's family came from Syria, but they were the Jewish Syrians, so they got ousted pretty quick.
Yeah, they did. You know, very interesting. I've been reading Steve Jobs's biography. And I think he was part Syrian, I think.
Yeah.
And he was adopted here.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you have any children that are into music?
No, I don't. You know, I nearly got engaged a couple of times, but I've been touring.
Right.
So, I never ended up getting married or having any accidental kids that I know of.
Not that you know of, right?
Yeah.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to promote?
Not really. This has been such a great interview, and it's rare that someone's so knowledgeable about what I've done, and I feel very honored to be on your show. Thank you so much.
John, you're a great guy. I thank you so much for appearing on the show today, especially for all the music you've given us with GPS, Asia, Intelligent Music Project 3, Touching the Divine, and all the music you continue to bring, and we're looking for great things from John Payne. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye. Make sure you purchase the new release, Intelligent Music Project 3, Touching the Divine, featuring session aces Simon Phillips, Nathan East, Tim Pierce on guitars, and the remarkable voices of John Payne and Joseph, Toto's Joseph, at Amazon.com or iTunes. Visit www.asiafeaturingjohnpayne.com to find out about new releases and current tours, or visit John on Facebook at www.facebook.com/asia.featuringjohnpayne. Please join me every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on the Ray Shasho Show. Coming up next week, we do finally have the interview on October 19th. My guest will be guitar hero Martin Barr. Martin has been the legendary guitarist for Jethro Tull for 43 years. His sound and playing have been a major factor in the Jethro Tull success. Album sales have exceeded 60 million units, and they continue to be played worldwide, representing an important part of classic rock history. Very special thanks to the great Billy James of Glass Onion PR for our interview today with John Payne. If you have comments or suggestions or would like to be a guest on the Ray Shasho Show, call 941-877-1552 or email us at ray@publicityworksagency.com. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on VBS Radio, Station 1.